You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, my beautiful people. Here's what I will attempt to cover today. My meanderings are lanyap for the soul. But the bulk of the content will be, I'll first talk about the best movie ever, the one we're living through. I'll talk more about lie detection, how to tell if somebody's lying to you. Based on listener feedback, people seem to like that. Not being lied to, but well, we'll see. I'll pose a theory that some people, in fact, maybe do like being lied to. I'll touch on wealth, mention the millionaire next door, NPCs, and what I did to my appearance recently that had people treating me way different. It was surprising. Oh, also some arguing with idiots. I never know which episodes or articles I put out there are going to be a hit, but arguing with idiots you seem to really like, so I'll give you some of that. But let's get politics out of the way first. If you don't like politics, go ahead and fast forward. There's bound to be something I talk about today that interests you. But I will assume many of you watched the Oval Office meeting with Zelensky, President Zelensky, President Trump, VP Vance, and others. And I will attempt to explain what's going on for those of you who want to know. Man, why do you talk about politics so much? Well, one, because I realize how close we came to communism. Something I've studied in great detail. And two, I've spent a lot of time in my life negotiating. And same thing, I've studied negotiating a lot. And what's happening in this real-time movie is some of the highest stakes negotiations you'll ever see or will ever be privy to. This would normally happen behind closed doors. What we saw the other day was not, we weren't supposed to see that. It just kind of happened, surprisingly. But if you get two former television stars in front of a camera, they won't hesitate to put on a show for us, right? So in the aftermath of that show, I'll tell you why most people don't want to know what's going on, why we tend to think most people are like us, that they're open to alternative opinions and want to be exposed to facts they're unaware of and engage in intellectual honesty and solve problems. That's not most people. Your TLDR is, that's not the case. And if you think you're going to reason someone out of their emotional strongholds, that's not going to happen. It was obvious what the reactions were going to be following the Trump-Vance meeting with Zelensky. The Ukrainian president isn't accustomed to dealing with competent American leaders. That much was obvious. It was also refreshing to see. You know, whether or not the Ukrainian president was getting advice from the likes of Susan Rice or Democrat senators or Euro leaders, that none of that's been proven. But it makes you wonder if maybe Trump is aligning us with the Russians against China and Iran. It kind of seems that way. We know whose side China is on, right? The globalists weren't developing deadly viruses with the Russians. What we do know is Zelensky did meet with Democrat senators prior to the Trump meeting, and that VP Vance said that he campaigned, Zelensky did, on Kamala Harris's behalf in Pennsylvania. I'd give that maybe a little bit of a Pinocchio, since he didn't necessarily give a stump speech or anything, but he did visit an ammunition plant with Democrats and put his signature on a bunch of missiles. I don't know if you saw that. Like literally took a Sharpie out and signed missiles for the cameras. But regardless of whether he campaigned against them, how are you going to go to a man's house hoping that he'll give you money? And I'll get into respect here in a minute, but you go to another man's house. I'm not saying you need to kiss his ass, but you don't get testy with the underboss. That's not smart. You don't think Trump knows about the ties that the Ukraine guy who tried to kill him, you don't think he knows about the ties to Ukraine that guy had? You remember on the golf course where he stuck the the end of his gun through the fence. I mean, if he hadn't done that, I don't know if the Secret Service would have seen him and caught him. So, yeah, the second assassination attempt, we know almost nothing about. And considering all that, the way Trump kept his composure was pretty impressive. Now, don't expect this sort of analysis. You see how I was fair and kind of defended Kamala Harris in that, or defended those who said that, well, the other side of Vance's argument that Zelensky campaigned on behalf of Democrats, right? You saw how I was fair. Don't expect that from blue, no matter who team types. They're going to be on one side and the good guys on the other. And that's as true as looking at genitals to determine the sex of a baby. See what I did there? It's not true to everybody. We all don't think that's true somehow. But for an explanation of why I call the other team the good guys, refer to my article last week called Don't Be a Sucker and Know Who the Bad Guys Are. Also, don't think the members of the blue team want to be educated. It's all team play. And you'd be better acting as though you're arguing with women and children, in that it has nothing's changed since last year when you had masculine men and feminine women battling feminine men and masculine women. In fact, it's getting worse. You know, 20 years ago, there was a running joke when you saw a man and you weren't sure of his sexuality. The women especially, they would ask, is he gay or European? Well, it's 20 years later now. Those Euros are in power. They're planning to send the next generation to war while migrants sit back at home with their wives and daughters. I mean, it's incredible. I'll give you an example of the blue team not wanting to be informed. So just a few days ago, one of the women I've long followed on X Twitter, she goes by Pork Chop or something. I followed her because she's very well read and she's educated me on a lot of literature. She's Ukrainian and she's well versed on Dostoevsky and other Russian authors. However, as I've said, offals who are quote unquote educated tend to think they're smart about everything. And if there's something you know, if there's something you know a lot about that they don't, you might think, oh, I know a lot about that. Let me educate you. And maybe you'll appreciate the knowledge as I have, as I've appreciated yours. It doesn't work that way. You're more likely to be silenced or canceled. Why is that? Because women and feminine men don't want to be exposed to views that contradict their worldview. There are too many feelings involved. So they'd rather you reinforce their opinion so that they can agree with you. They bond that way. They call them bubbles for a reason. They don't want people to follow them and disagree with them in any way. And of course, there are exceptions. So don't be the exception guy, please. Ask yourself if what I'm saying is generally true. But man, why do you have to generalize? Because in order to live in reality, you have to make sense of the world. And in order to make sense of the world, you have to see patterns. In order to see patterns, you have to think beyond your emotions at a minimum before you draw any conclusions. That's how men are. And if you try educating some awful about something that they don't know, you would be mansplaining, right? So this Pork Chop, she says, everyone saying Zelensky should have just publicly debased himself for Trump and Vance just to get the deal ignores what a shitty deal it is in the first place. No security guarantees whatsoever in exchange for the right of U.S. to plunder Ukraine. Russia gets to do business as usual, rearm itself, and invade who knows what again in a few years. And I said they expected Zelensky to be a man of honor, a man of his word, and negotiate in good faith. The deal had already been agreed to. Anyone who negotiates for a living knows that if you show up at the closing table to sign and then try to negotiate further, the other party walks. Like, I've never seen anyone say in the business world, I haven't negotiated much of anything, so I'm going to sit this one out. Because they're smart about everything and therefore don't need any more knowledge of how the world works. We don't call them know most of it alls, right? We call them know it alls for a reason. The same people tend to be economically illiterate. And why wouldn't they be? If you're economically illiterate, you wouldn't understand one of the most basic tenets of how the world works, which is follow the money. Even though following the money explains almost every issue of importance, not least of which the U.S. involvement in Ukraine. I don't even think your average awful, which is affluent white female liberal, would know what money laundering is, much less recognize when it's happening. I truly don't think they know that, what money laundering actually is. And again, I'll say for idiots, there are exceptions, but in matters of war, in matters of war and negotiations, women should allow men to take the lead. They should, of course, have a say, but we're talking about war, which is, here's another topic I know a lot about, World War II, the last world war we had. Do you know what percentage of combat deaths were men in World War II? 99.9%. It's about the same percentage of abortions done by women, which I believe is probably 100%, right? We're talking 99.9. But those numbers, if the bad guys had a say, since men can now be women, it might even out the numbers, 99.9 to 99.9. I don't know. I say all that to say we should leave abortion to women. But like war, men should have a say because they're involved. Women make up something like 55% of the electorate. If you want to kill your baby, convince other women to allow it. But leave men out of the abortion debate. And women can stay out of war negotiations. So then Porkchop posts a comment by somebody named Will Chamberlain that says, if our European allies were actually allies, they would have stood by Trump in the face of Zelensky's brazen disrespect for our country. But they are not our allies. They are allies of the Democrat Party, not America. Makes sense to me, if you know what an ally is. Remember that war that I just discussed? They call themselves the allies, right? Of course, this is why the good guys are fighting globalists. The term globalist implies they're not beholden to a particular country. Your country is the leftist elites of the world, trying to usher in communism through mass migration and silencing your critics and centralizing power. Then the pork chop gal said this. She said, if you repeat a lie 1,000 times, it becomes the truth. They will keep repeating this disrespect word like parrots, when in reality it never happened. If you're a bully, of course anyone standing up to you is being disrespectful, and the word allows them to cope with the cabinet's own inadequate and juvenile behavior. So I said yes, because adults talk about being bullied a lot. And then I quoted what was probably the most disrespectful thing Zelensky said, which was, during the war, everybody has problems, even you. But you have a nice ocean and don't feel it now, but you will feel it in the future. And I said, yeah, your guy effed up. Sorry, Toots. And she didn't like that, which in her defense is probably understandable. Not just me calling her Toots, but she's Ukrainian. And I imagine her emotions are as strong as they've ever been in her life. I mean, if their leader's going to get emotional in the most important meeting of his life, for all the world to see, I mean, would you expect some literary critic to think clearly? I wouldn't. Anyway, her response was, I'm not an adult for using the word bully, yet you're the one following me and in my replies. Blocked. Sorry, Toots. Good one, I guess. I don't know if she's implying that I'm a child for following her, but as I said, I followed her because I thought she was smart. But when something happens that they don't know anything about, they show you that they're not, unfortunately. Yeah. So when you're blocked, I didn't even get a chance to reply, aw shucks. But women and children talk about being bullied, not men. Saying Zelensky was bullied, that's not a serious analysis. How many years have we been told as Americans that the world doesn't respect us? And then you have a foreign leader come and demonstrate it for us. So if we end up in World War III, it'll look much different than previous world wars, in that we'll know what the women and children think, unless we try to educate them and then they can block us. I mean, I would say the only thing that sucks about being blocked by people like the pork chop is eventually I won't know what they think, because I'll be oblivious to their nonsense. I won't have any exposure to it. And how can I opine on these matters if I'm unable to see what the blue no matter who globalists think? If I want to see it, I've got to probably keep my mouth shut. But again, I thought she was smart, so I might get a rebuttal, but it doesn't work that way. Oh, something else I should say. Women like fiction a lot. Something like 80% of women read fiction by choice. So it stands to reason that the movie they're choosing to watch is fiction. Lie to me, daddy. I just want to feel good. And of course, the truth doesn't feel so good. Ask Lizzo. There's only a few good men who can handle the truth. You get me? If there's a theater production with actors and actresses, all the better. A Lifetime movie, it doesn't matter. They just want to feel, which a lot of men don't understand anymore, since we don't understand the power dynamics between men and women anymore, the intergender dynamics. Men think it's ridiculous that a woman will start a fight just to feel something, believing it's, you know, some of them tend to believe it's better to feel negative emotion than nothing at all. That's why there's no faster way to lose a woman than to be boring, right? You're better off taking her on a roller coaster of emotions. Whereas the power dynamic between men is something that they don't understand, which is why they might say that Zelensky was bullied. Men don't think that way, not masculine men. Or women just don't understand respect between men, the respect men give each other and why. Very few women would get that. A man shows up to meet for the most important meeting of his life, to meet with the new administration of the free world wearing a sweatshirt. I get you're at war, dude, but we don't care. Put on a freaking suit. It's called respect, you entitled prick. Who's known for being entitled? Women and children. Let them get accustomed to all that money without any gratitude or reciprocation, and watch how the entitled attitude that they develop. It's going to reveal itself every time. You'll see them fold their arms and roll their eyes. Zelensky embodied entitlement, and he was bodied for it. When I go to other countries like Europe, I respect their local customs, dress a little better, show respect, wear less baseball caps. When I went to Japan, I was calling my buddy Chase, like, hey, man, tell me about their customs and culture, the do's and don'ts. And that's out of respect. Same reason you dress up for church. You know that nod of respect you give a man who works hard when you respect their competence or achievements? Respect for a man is earned by way of his actions and results in the world. Every man knows the nod I'm talking about. You realize a woman's never done that nod, ever. They don't even have the same definition of respect. If they did, we wouldn't have as many problems as we do between the genders. Seeing as women need love and men need respect, a lot of people don't even know that. A woman's definition of respect is something like concern for their feelings. It's listening and not dismissing their opinions. They want to be validated. Their respect is closer to relational equality and empathy. But in our conflation of the sexes, we talk as if we view respect the same way. We do not. I don't know how many people watched the entire 50-minute interaction between Zelensky and Trump and Vance, but Trump actually said he liked Zelensky's clothes, as a good negotiator would. You know, he gave him a hard time, but and I would have too, but, you know, a good negotiator would also walk if you had an agreed upon deal and then one side shows up at the closing table and then continues to try to negotiate. That person's going to walk every time. But men prefer nonfiction. That's why they say if you want to piss off the good guys, lie to them. If you want to piss off the blue no matter who team, tell them the truth. I even had one time an awful... This is kind of crazy. I used to donate to her charity, and not small sums of money. And this is before Trump came on the political scene, but she defriended me. I don't know how smart that was. Think about this. What is the end game for those who want to continue the war? They don't know. It's all emotional. It's what makes you feel good about yourself now. You got the other side trying to solve problems and the other trying to feel good about themselves. with Ukraine flags in their bio, not caring, of course, what's happening in Sudan or other humans around the world. It's selective outrage, of course. But as I've said, some people aren't good with cause and effect. So they want to continue a war that accomplishes nothing and risks everything, which is what nuclear war does. It risks, you're risking it all. And that is unwise. If we allowed awfuls to dictate the ways of the world, we would self-destruct. Some might even argue that the reason women need men at all is to keep them from self-destruction. But it's a new world, and they don't need no man. They need a cat and antidepressants, I guess. Yes, there are exceptions, many exceptions. Those who see everything through the oppressed-oppressor narrative, you wouldn't even need to hear what was said to know which side women and gays are going to take. You have a foreigner who looks like a little boy next to the most powerful man in the world. They're always going to take the weaker one side. Always. It doesn't matter what faces they make or how loudly they speak. They're going to go with the twerp. They want to continue sending our money and weapons to Ukraine instead of ending the war. Because Trump wants to end the war. It doesn't matter what position Trump would take. They're going to take the opposite. It's not like you can say, hey, dummies, people are dying. People are being kidnapped and sent to the front lines to be slaughtered. Real humans, dead. We have a chance to put a stop to that. And they might say, well, Putin started the war, whatever. No nuance, because obviously they haven't considered that we provoked the shit out of them. I chimed in on a conversation. This one was between Devin and Jeremy, where Devin says, how should we end this war? And Jeremy said, give Ukraine as many weapons as they want and provide them all of the global logistical support they need to defeat Russia. Call it Cold War 2.0. Keep pressure on Russia until their house of cards collapses. To which Devin says, this already has a name. It's called a hot war. You're pro-war, which involves death and a very large budget. To which Jeremy replies, asking, who started this war? And Devin says, that's not the question. The question is, how should we end it? You don't need a reason to continue a war. Just say, F that guy. And Jeremy says, I think people who refuse to answer the easy who started this war question are making their loyalties quite clear. And I said to Jeremy, if I pushed you, you told me to stop, then I pushed you again, then you hit me, who started the fight? To which somebody replied and said, such a great metaphor. You know what Jeremy said? You think it forced him to rethink things? No, of course not. He said, I have no idea what you're even trying to say with that sloppy metaphor. Yeah, I didn't think you would, but this is kind of getting into the weeds if you don't know who Susan Rice is, but I'll talk about lie detection, which I know you seem to like. So the blue actors and actresses aren't always good actors. A good actor doesn't let their face betray what they really think or believe. When watching a good actor, it's hard to tell when they're lying, right? Because they can really control their facial movements and emotions. Those who aren't good actors, the blue team will try to hide them as much as possible, which is why after Susan Rice went on the Sunday shows following the Benghazi debacle caused by a YouTube video that nobody watched. We didn't see much of her after that because she's not good at it. So we've seen Schiff and Raskin and Warren, Pocahontas. Those three I just mentioned, they're not going to crack. But Susan Rice is going to crack and show her ass or show too much of what she really thinks by way of showing too much face, let's say. So she decided to give an interview the day after the Trump-Zelensky meeting. And if you haven't watched it, just watch closely when she talks about Zelensky being a democratically supported president. As you know, 2014, our government overthrew the Ukrainian democratically elected leader. Just listen to the Victoria Nuland phone call if you want some insight on that. But yeah, we actually installed the puppet we wanted. We did a color revolution and all that. I don't know if that sounds familiar. So when she's talking about the Ukraine's democratically elected leader, she holds back a smile. which is the tell, in addition to the scripted way she communicates. But when they're really full of shit, they can't help but smile. And they, of course, don't realize that their face is doing that. And not a lot of people see it. But I could give you many examples of this. If you want to see it for yourself, go watch Al Schmidt, who, I don't know if he'll end up in prison. I don't know what's going to happen with him. But for his role in one of the more ostentatious theater productions of the last 10 years, do you remember this guy? His role was to play a Republican on the election commission in Philadelphia. So he was a plant. And this is a good one to test your lie detection skills. So go to YouTube, search Al Schmidt 60 Minutes, and I'll try to remember to include a link in the show notes. But you want to make sure you're watching the right episode, because I believe they had him on in 2024 also, but the 60 Minutes, the propaganda show I'm talking about, is from 2020. And as I've said previously, I don't know why this is one of the talents I've been blessed with, if you can call it a talent. Maybe you could, since it is something I recognized early on and developed. But the ability to see people's facial movements as if they're in slow motion, to the point where I can usually tell when somebody's full of it almost immediately. And it's helpful in the business world or in a lot of contexts where you deal with people. I know right away when somebody's interested in what I'm saying or not, which doesn't help me here, I realize, but because you can't see me, but or if somebody doesn't like me, it's always helpful to save you time or to vet people better or make better decisions, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, watch this guy, Al Schmidt. The first question he's asked, he struggles to hold back a giant laugh, so much so that they had to cut. So they edited his giggles out, but you can see him starting to giggle when they cut. And he's one of the worst actors I've ever seen. And I was thinking, no way that this dude would even be chosen for a lead role in a high school play. How could they have him on a TV show that's widely viewed for something so important? He's the worst actor imaginable. A minute later, he claims that he's getting all these death threats and acts like he's real scared. But the initial question to him was, how bad are things in Philadelphia? And maybe this will better illustrate my point. If you thought that you were just going to do your job every day, like a 9-to-5, and somebody sent you a letter, or you got numerous letters, as he claims, let's say a Christian man sends you a letter, of course, right? Because he's anti-Christian. So he only had a chance. He only had time on air to read one letter. And so the script he reads from the letter said something like, "The Lord, my Savior, said I have to kill you." Yeah, because people say that. You know, let's say you live in Houston and you're getting all these threats on your life for the first time in your life for the past week or two. And then you're interviewed and somebody asks, "Hey, how bad are things in Houston right now?" Is that something you would laugh about? But it's more than that. I won't go through it all, but I've said it before. Many people are just not good at discerning bullshit, unfortunately, but I'm here to help. The bioweapons lab, should we talk about? Would you believe that we funded the virus that shut down the world? And our last president gave the guy responsible for that a pardon for crimes against the United States? That actually happened. You can't expect an NPC to infer what's happened in Ukraine, what is actually going on there. You'd have to think, one, it's a coincidence Biden's son was on the board at Burisma, a Ukrainian energy company. 195 countries in the world, and Biden's son just so happened to work in the one we've given billions of dollars to, hundreds of billions of untraceable dollars. And two, that Biden's quid pro quo, where he's on video saying, unless you fire the prosecutor investigating Burisma, you're not getting the $1 billion. An NPC isn't going to, I don't even know, you know, they may be in their own information silo and not be exposed to any of this. But if you neutrally ask because you're curious, well, what did you think about the Biden quid pro quo? They won't know what you're talking about. or they'll just fire back because they just hate Trump so much you can't have a dialogue with them. Did you know North Koreans are being sent to fight on the Russian side of the conflict? And when they're captured and interrogated, they believe they're fighting the South Koreans. That's true. Kim Jong-un, or is that his name? Yeah, the North Korean dictator. He sent over 10,000 troops to fight in the Kursk region of Ukraine. And a bunch of them are dying because they're not prepared for combat. And others, in an effort to avoid capture, they instead do suicide missions to take out as many Ukrainians as they can. War is hell. All right, switching gears. Let's talk about wealth and power. I'll share a post with you from Rob Henderson on X. Just a few weeks ago, he released a book, his first book, titled Troubled, a memoir of foster care, family, and social class. I haven't read it, but I plan to. It's supposed to be comparable to J.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy because Henderson was born to a drug-addicted mother and had a rough upbringing. He lived in 10 different foster homes, I believe, and then was finally adopted. But he excelled academically and went on to attend Yale and Cambridge, which is where he came up with the term luxury beliefs, which I'll talk about in a minute. But I first want to share his post recently regarding the fertility of men going back to 17th century Massachusetts, back before Massachusetts changed its name, evidently, to Taxachusetts. It's funny, the only stories we Southerners hear about up in the Northeast in that part of the world is that's the state where the Kennedys hail from. And there's a solid summer baseball league there. We hear about Obama's chef who drowned paddleboarding in 6 to 8 feet of calm water. And you realize that guy just so happened to have a video displaying his excellent swimming skills on Instagram? Maybe we'll hear more about that soon. Or when the border states tried to make Martha's Vineyard like Laredo, Texas, and they sent a bunch of illegals to Martha's Vineyard. Like, hey, Martha, let's see how you like all this criminality you claim to be in favor of. If you haven't yet read my last blog article, Don't Be a Sucker, I write about virtue signaling, which is when you pretend to care for certain people or policy positions because you're overly concerned with what others think of you, so you virtue signal. But in reality, you've never had to deal with the consequences of what it is that you're advocating for, which is where Henderson's theory of luxury beliefs comes from. Except he defines luxury beliefs as beliefs that are held by elites, and it could be ideas or even just opinions that confer some sort of social status on the more affluent among us, but that have serious costs on lower income folks. The luxury beliefs are the modern status symbol of choice, let's call it. Now that multimillionaires are wearing hoodies and driving Toyotas, which is actually the car most driven by millionaires, if you can believe it. I believe it's been that way since the 90s. I know in Thomas Stanley's book, The Millionaire Next Door, he talks about how it's not the wealthy who are driving around in all types of Benzes and Rolls's. They're used to riding a rinky-dink. I remember recommending The Millionaire Next Door to one of my top dogs. This is probably 10, 15 years ago. And after he read it, he was pissed that I didn't recommend it to him sooner because he had just bought a new Rover truck and said, let me get this beef shit over, bruh. Not really. Not that last part. That's number one stunner. You know, number one stunner. My Paul baby. All Dirty South stuff. But yeah, if you're tempted to become poorer so that you can jump out of Lexuses and Hummers showing off for your people, you got to remember how slow the new Rolls Royce be, right? But that book will help. It'll make you want to drive a POS car if you can and invest the rest like the best, a true test. My daughter likes the rhyming game. True test of character and what's important to you. But I'm not against driving something a little fancy. I've done it. You just want to make sure it's a tiny sliver of your net worth. That is my advice. And only if you can pay cash. Because if you're financing something for 72 months at $1,000 a month, I would tell you that is unwise. Can you believe they're convincing buyers to car buyers to finance a car that long, 6 years. What's next? You're going to apply for a mortgage that's like a 50-year mortgage? Remember, the borrower is slave to the lender. And slavery ended a long time ago, at least in America. So don't do it. Reconsider. Read some litter. You know, America's the only country to ever fight a war within itself to end slavery. I tried explaining that to a lefty friend of mine one time. Former friend now, of course. I truly have few lefty friends left. I mean, they pretty much all abandoned me. But Lizzo had it right there too, right? Truth hurts. But this dude was way too anti-American to believe what I was even telling him. He was from South America originally, and he was probably 3 or 4 years older than me and so much smarter than me, like to the point where I never had a valid opinion about anything. But that didn't bother me. I mean, I knew how he was, and you know how I am. I like to observe people and try to navigate the relationship despite their shortcomings, I guess. We all have them. And I think it was maybe a combination of ego or just him being a little older than me. Probably, man, he was credentialed too. I think he had a master's degree or something. Anyway, I wasn't anxious to share things like this with him, like certain facts that he might not know about, because I knew he wouldn't be receptive to any information that might conflict with his preconceived beliefs and worldview. Or, you know, I could have told him that there have actually been more people from Africa who have come to America for freedom and opportunity than ever came over as slaves. But he would have told me to stop watching Fox News, I think. So I didn't get a chance to share that one, that last one, about Africans coming here voluntarily. Not because he's immune to facts, although that did seem to be true. But he was just so dismissive of the fact that the first fact I shared with him, that we had fought a civil war to end slavery, and that many people died for that cause. He looked at me like, bro, Brazil did that too. And I thought, I'm not going to correct him. I'm just going to let him think that. Kind of like a fight with your spouse when you ask yourself, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? Well, I liked having a friend more than a political sparring partner, but he ended up defending me anyway. And I didn't argue with that either. If he were my friend, I'd have told him he was being a little bitch. But him telling me I need to watch Fox News, that's a very NPC thing to say. And by the way, Brazil did not fight a war within itself to end slavery. That's not how they eradicated slavery. But yeah, what an NPC does is they'll give you the most common refrain to where you know what they're going to say before they say it. Like if you tell somebody you think the whole climate change agenda is a giant money laundering redistribution of wealth scheme, then they'll throw out the 97% of scientists agree. Their responses are very predictable because they're unoriginal. Other examples might be you bump into somebody and they say, whoa, at least buy me dinner first. Har har. Or they're the first to say, we live in a republic, not a democracy. Okay, you're smart, dude. Haven't heard that before. Or you're talking, let's say, you're talking about something to do with working out, and they'll say, swimming is the best exercise. I saw somebody posted on X something like, why do men in their 40s, MAGA men in their 40s, always talk about high school like it's part of their identity? Is it not part of your identity? So anyway, what do you think an NPC would answer? They would say, you know what I'm going to say, right? Because they peaked in high school. Of course. Always the most common answer. As you know, I share stories from high school quite a bit. And maybe I did peak in high school. I don't know. Tough to say. But I enjoyed my time in high school. Probably as much as my 20s. No, not my 20s. But I'd put my 30s on par with my teen years. Although I admit I'm kind of a loser now. At least my neighbors think so. You want to hear something interesting? And this may be obvious, but people treat you differently depending on what kind of car you drive. And I first noticed this when I was renting cars just about weekly for work. Because at that time, I was driving a foreign whip. And the rental cars I would drive would be like Malibus, Chevy Malibus or something similar. Well, there was a huge difference when I would try to get over or merge, for example, if I was driving a Chevy versus, say, a BMW or something. And I had a similar experience lately. So I don't know how many of you viewed my Instagram story, but I posted a view of my hairdo last week. Yes, that was me. I've had a few people ask me if that was really me. Yes, I look like Riff Raff the rapper. And my hair was all pulled back and braided and it looked terrible. But lucky for me, the only person in the world I was trying to impress was my little girl, and she loved it. So that's a win in my book. But people who don't know you, they treat you so differently. And I actually like that because as I said, I'm always observing people and just seeing the difference in how people are treated or how they react to you, watching their faces, that kind of thing. And maybe it informs you how not to be, because I don't ever want to judge people too much on appearances. Remember how I was telling you a lot of people tend to be a little racist until the other person opens their mouth and starts talking? Well, this experience taught me a lot. I mean, it didn't matter where I went. I was seeing all turd face all day. Like if I was in the elevator with somebody or just try to strike up a conversation with a respectable looking person who, let's say they're older than me, like a respectable man, normally it'd be an enjoyable back and forth when I'm not looking like riffraff, but their face would show me that they were so disappointed. Like they would constantly glance at my hair and it would distract them from the conversation. And, you know, I'm sure they thought I was trash. And because of their reaction to the way I look, I kind of thought it was funny. But, you know, I didn't laugh out loud or anything. I just kind of was amused. Which speaks to, if you're trying to impress people, you probably want to clean it up a little bit. Don't try to get away with what I did. I had extensions and everything. So appearances matter. What do they say? God judges you on the inside and people judge you on the outside. And I would argue, if you don't pass their judgment on the outside, you might not even get a chance to show them what's inside. So appearances are important. So you want to dress, what do they say? You want to dress like the job that you want, not the job you have. Well, not somebody who's doing a social test to see how differently you'll treat him in a society where appearances might matter a little too much. You know, you want to leave that for me. But it was fascinating. The braids, they only lasted like 8 days or something. They're gone now. I started seeing extensions on my pillow the morning after, about day three. But again, you can do that kind of thing with your lettuce when you've only got one person to impress. And my little girl thought it was the best thing ever. She went from saying, "Mans don't wear braids," to wanting to put beads in them. And there was one other guy who liked them, this black dude who had braids in his hair too. He gave me one of those big bro handshakes, you know, where you throw your hand way up behind you and then lock in the handshake like you're about to arm wrestle. And then you finish with a finger lock, like a thumb war could break out at any minute. He loved them. And he was like, "Damn, bro, you got the braids." He goes, "My man." And then, I told him that I did it for my little girl. And he goes, "You know what he said?" He says, "What race is her mom?" Getting back to NPCs. So there's no nuance to their thought process. There's no independent thinking. They function more like a non-player character, which is what NPC stands for. The example I've used previously is when you're playing Tecmo Bowl with Bo Jackson and you run up at an angle and then down and then up again and all those dudes go diving all over the place. Those are NPCs. Another example would be if you said to them, "Tell me a story from high school." That's not something they're capable of doing. To an NPC, everything is binary. So my team good, your team bad. And I talked about this last episode, how regardless of whether you like Trump or not, to an NPC, even the name Trump is likely to cause them to shut down. They wouldn't be able to set aside their disdain, their hate, to see if they could maybe learn something from him. Because at the end of the day, another thing they might say every day, there's a guy earlier this year, he left a review for me on Apple Podcasts and gave it a 1 star, which sucks for me, right? If one of you would go and balance that out with a 5er, I'd much appreciate it. But to his credit, he did elaborate why he gave the podcast a 1 star. He said that I used to provide valuable information, and now I was just another Trumper. But he went further, and he said that I said Hillary made excuses for losing the 2016 election, but he didn't say, meaning me, I didn't say, that Trump never admitted to losing the 2020 election. So therefore, I was a hypocrite. He actually titled his review Hypocrite, now I think about it. And I don't want to spend time giving this one NPC listener I have the gratification of addressing his review directly, especially since he was anonymous. Why would you want to communicate with cowards? That won't make your life better. Ain't nobody got time for that. And I certainly don't want to make this episode about the 2020 election. I'll just say if what was obvious to me was obvious to everyone, I wouldn't be here doing this. And if you didn't see shenanigans in that 2020 election, especially based on everything we know now, you're a fucking idiot. Because you wouldn't know everything we know now. Or you're on a team and therefore can't be objective. But yeah, unfortunately, an NPC, they don't know anything. They're siloed and like rote mechanical intelligence or lack thereof. They don't understand how the world works. They don't understand economics. They don't understand cause and effect. None of that, which is actually, if you think about it, it's why I believe our media stopped categorizing people as low information voters. Remember that category, low information voters? And they stopped doing that for a reason. And I use that example for a reason, because an NPC wouldn't infer that on their own. There's no part of their mind that says, wait a minute, I see what you're doing here. They don't have that capability. It's just not possible in the NPC brain, or lack thereof. It's not something that would occur to them. Like, why would the media eliminate one of their favorite categories to group voters into? You know, those aha moments when you're reading or you discover something for yourself, when neurons start firing and connecting. I don't know about you, but I live for that. It might be, that's probably why I read a lot. Well, NPCs don't have those moments. Their version of it is when they're told something that we've all heard before, like at least buy me dinner first. And then they start saying it themselves because they thought it was clever and it made them say, aha, I like that. And then they'll just regurgitate what they've been told. Their opinions have been assigned to them by the media, usually, unknowingly, of course. And it'll always be that way. It's kind of human nature. It's just that in our time, thanks to the internet, we can now see what people in the bottom quartile of, in terms of brain power, we can see how they think and read it, which I've talked about, where I talk about how often we neglect to realize this, but when you do, the world starts to make a lot more sense. Like, think about it. If you're driving down the highway, on average, every fourth car is being driven by someone who is in the bottom 25% of the population in their ability to think and process information. And they'll often give us evidence of it when they do something stupid on the ROADs. Although I think most of the time when you get frustrated with other drivers, it usually can be attributed to selfishness, them not being considerate of other people. Like people like to denigrate another race or say this other race other than their own or terrible drivers. Like Theo Von said, he's not racist, but he does have flare-ups in traffic sometimes. But it's usually cultural. Like if you know from which culture they're from, you could probably say, oh, that makes sense. They tend to be inconsiderate and selfish. And you see that when you're driving. Like this group of people isn't known to be, their culture isn't one that's charitable. They tend to be more entitled. Or this other group, they're terrible tippers. Or, you know, if you're a terrible tipper, you're probably not going to be courteous and let somebody in or get over from the left lane and let you pass. Or the women from this culture tend to be overly cautious and timid, and that's going to have you driving really slow and probably make you a terrible driver. This car I bought recently, it makes this terrible, annoying beeping sound that keeps beeping until I put my seatbelt on. And I could probably figure out how to turn it off. I just haven't yet. I've only had the car a little while. And you know, something I think about sometimes, when I was 10 years old, there was a car accident about 100 yards from my house, maybe less. It was real close. And there was a highway, so it was a street over. And it had a ditch on either side of the highway. And all the driveways were made of concrete, and they would cross over the ditch to the houses along the highway on either side. And it would go over a culvert so the water could pass underneath the driveway. Well, one day, there was a senior in high school. Elizabeth Hebert was her name. And she was driving a Suburban with three of her friends as passengers. And she lost control of the Suburban, and it went into the ditch, and it hit the culvert at my friend Freddie's house, and it flipped the Suburban up onto its upside down onto the driveway. And she sadly passed away. It was very sad. She was a popular girl. And I want to say she was slated to be the valedictorian that year. And I remember she was supposed to play a solo for the band. I believe she played the flute or the clarinet. I can't remember which. And in her place, there was another girl that went out in front of the band. And this was during marching season. My older brother was in band, so I'd go watch the competitions. And so another girl would play it instead. And it was beautiful. I can still remember how it sounded. And it'd be completely silent in the stadium while she played, and people in the stands would be tearing up, and I almost did myself. It was pretty touching. Anyway, what I remember most about that crash is that she was the only one who died, and she was the only one wearing a seatbelt. And they said for that reason, because she was wearing her seatbelt, she actually choked on her own blood. So imagine hearing that as an impressionable 10-year-old. I was hesitant to put my seatbelt on sometimes. And, you know, your mom's always telling you, make sure you wear your seatbelt. And she still does that. And I still do most of the time. I'm just telling you, it's something I think about. But the first car accident I was intimately familiar with, the girl wouldn't have died had she not been wearing a seatbelt like the other passengers. But as I always say, life is largely about playing the odds. So you probably want to click it or ticket, which we've all heard that one before, right? That was a nationwide campaign started in 03, I believe, the year I finished school. You know what was probably the most successful campaign of that sort? It was right here in Texas. Don't mess with Texas. It is crazy how words and phrases are used to persuade people. After I had lived in Texas for a few years, I was in high school by this time, and I went to visit some of my old buddies in Louisiana, and we had gotten an 18-pack of Bud Light, and we were headed to New Orleans to party. Well, on the way there, we had some empty beer cans we wanted to get rid of, so the guy driving, who was not drinking, said, give them to me, I'll take care of them, and he took the box with a bunch of empty beer cans in it and just threw it out the window, and to me, it felt gross. Like, how could you do that? And I said something like, that's not cool, man. Like, and he was like, what? And I said, yeah, to throw a bunch of trash out the window like that. I said, what if everybody did that? And he said to me, what if every car on the road was filled with teenagers drinking beer? Just kidding. He didn't say that. But I told him, I said, not to be all highfalutin, but that's just not something we do in Texas. Like, I've never seen anybody do that. And he said, why not? And I said, I swear to you, I said this. I said, I don't know, because we don't mess with Texas. Like, that's a saying there. That campaign was started in 1986 when government officials and law enforcement, what they determined was that those doing most of the littering were men driving trucks in rural parts of Texas. And they were spending something like $20 million on Texans' tax money to clean up the garbage everywhere. Every year, $20 million a year, roughly. So what they did, they tried to come up with persuasive language that could be a tagline to appeal to the beer-drinking Texans who like to litter. And they came up with this slogan, don't mess with Texas. And they printed a bunch of bumper stickers and started handing them out to everybody that drove a truck. and they saw this huge reduction in the amount of trash on the roads and saved the taxpayers millions of dollars. How about that? So don't mess with Texas. They'll use persuasive language on you, and that'll not only have you not littering, but calling out your buddies in other states, I guess. Oh, the post on fertility in Taxachusetts. He said, this is Rob Henderson talking. He said, Elon Musk, currently the richest man in the world, is seen as prolific with 13 children, but his fertility is on par with the median woman in Massachusetts in the late 17th century. At that time, family sizes of more than 10 children were common in New England. Historically, men who accumulate status and power and are not confined by institutional rules or strong social norms have more female partners than ordinary men. As the Harvard biologist Richard Wrangham has written, if a male wins power, he will tend to use it to mate with as many females as possible. In most post-agricultural societies throughout history, such as among the Aztecs, Babylonians, Chinese, Egyptians, Incans, Indians, and Romans, harems of hundreds of women were the norm for kings, emperors, and pharaohs. The largest number of children any man has ever had is 888. This individual was a Moroccan emperor named Ismail the Bloodthirsty, who reigned from 1672 to 1727. Equivalently powerful women throughout history, such as Cleopatra, did not accumulate large harems of hundreds of attractive young men. They could have, but they didn't. To be clear, not all powerful males follow this specific pattern. Alexander the Great never showed more than a passing interest in women and fathered just a single child by the time he died at age 32. But Alexander bucked the trend. Do we know Alexander's last name? Maybe it's because he only had one kid. A 2016 study of 33 non-industrialized small-scale societies found that in humans, men's status, as indexed by wealth and political influence, is positively associated with several reproductively relevant outcomes, including number of sexual partners, number of offspring, and number of offspring surviving into adulthood. In modern societies, men who obtain high levels of income or occupational prestige are more likely to find a romantic partner and have children. A study from 2019 found that a man at the top of the earnings distribution has a more than 90% chance of obtaining a committed romantic partner. In contrast, for men at the bottom, less than 40% find one. In most societies, successful men try to convert their high status into reproductive success. Of course, human culture is diverse and varied, and constraints on powerful men can inhibit their impulses. Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, who together possess more than the bottom 50% of Americans combined, each have only three children. Only. That sounds like a lot in today's day and age. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. And, you know, I can remember, I guess this is probably unrelated, but when I was in my 20s, I was asking somebody when I was in a bar, I guess this speaks to status is why I'm sharing it. And if I asked, where did you go to high school? And they were the pretentious type, which you see a lot when you're out in Houston. It's not as bad as Dallas, but you'll still encounter people who think they're better than you, for example. Remember the tip I've given you, the quickest tell to know whether someone isn't better than you is they'll act like they are. That's how you know. Because somebody who's better than you, they're not going to act like it. They'll treat the janitor the same way they treat the waitress, they treat the C-suite, you know, it doesn't matter. I had a minor Twitter ex-Twitter with a guy who argued with me on this. I shared my view that it's a tell when somebody acts like they're better than you, that they're unwittingly revealing that they're in fact not better than you. And this dude said something like, nobody's better than you. Every individual has worth. Just work on becoming a better version of yourself or something like that. And which is true. I mean, the last part of what he said anyway, but I said, I've been blessed to surround myself with people who are better than me my entire life. But you know, you do you, bro. And also, I'm obviously better than you. I didn't say that. I didn't say, tell him he was better than me or I was better than him because I didn't want him to know that he might be better than me, right? See how that works? Something that's always shocking is when you're always around higher caliber individuals is when you encounter somebody who's a caricature of what you've always denigrated or mocked. So in the case of when I asked somebody where they went to high school, this one guy called me out for it. So after a few times of getting like a weird look, he was like, why do you want to know that, bro? And I was like, well, I'm just curious what part of town you're from, because Houston is huge. And he was like, oh, I thought you were trying to figure out if I went to Memorial or something. So Memorial is kind of a, you know, higher income area. And I was like, I didn't think of that. You know, I wouldn't judge you any different if you went to a private school or Memorial or whatever. Or Aldine or Eisenhower High or one of those. Anyway, where was I? Yeah, something that when you're always around higher caliber people, I think you encounter somebody that is like a caricature of somebody that you might make fun of. So that's always weird to me. So I met this girl at the gym one time, and I must have been about 30. Cute girl, friendly. I want to say we're still Facebook friends. If you're listening, Libby, I'm talking about you. Libby isn't her real name. I chose that name to ascribe an awful, a loving label like Libby for alliterative purposes. Not really. But I'd gotten to know her, and she was in there as much as me. And eventually I Facebook friended her, and she was the type to change her profile pic like once a week, and I had seen that she had taken selfies in the bathroom wearing the same thing that I had seen her wear like last Wednesday, you know, the week before when I talked to her for 15 minutes. And I was like, no way, that's the same girl that I thought was so cool. Like, you know, we'd laugh together and make fun of the same things. And then to think that she was going into the ladies' locker room and then making duck faces and sticking her hip to the side, you know, to give her that artificial curvaceous look that's never once attracted a man like me, and posting it for all the world to see. And I was just thinking, how is this the same girl? Like, I actually started reflecting on past conversations to see if we'd ever made fun of a girl who does that. Like, that's how weirded out I was. And I've had that kind of thing happen a bunch. So the next gym I joined, there was a trainer girl who never said hi to me. You know, if she made eye contact, she would look away right away. And she was as friendly as the girl who helps you at the DMV, right? That kind of girl. And I see her online and the same thing. She's one of those gals who posts heavily filtered selfies just about every day. And she'll have the inspirational quotes underneath. I mean, the gap between her person and her persona, like the distance between the N and the A there, between person, persona, it was so vast. I couldn't believe it. And it just tells me the difference between people online and what they portray is not always how they are in person. Because you would think of somebody who's always trying to motivate and inspire people with quotes, I mean, you would think they'd be friendly, right? But that's a new phenomenon, at least of the last 10, 15 years. You want a funny trainer story? At the gym where I met the first girl I mentioned, I dated this trainer and body karate. She, you know, she was a trainer, as you would expect. So, but she was chasing bread. Oh, damn, she got a bird brain. And I just bought a crib, 3 stories. It was a trilogy, me and Big Sean. But I was maybe 31, I guess. And she was probably 21, I don't know. And she didn't call me sir, so I knew I had a shot, right? Remember last episode, I told you young kings that if you're trying to go young, you get the rejection that'll save you a lot of time. Be grateful, you know, if they call you sir.
Yeah.
So come to think of it, if my wife had called me sir when we met, I wouldn't have my loving family. Anyway, this girl I knew, she knew that I worked in high tech. And so one day she and I became Facebook friends. And after we had dated a little bit, and I said to her, I see her at the gym, and I said, hey, she knew I worked in technology or in software. And I told her, I said, hey, I put a software program on my Facebook just to see who's scoping out my page. And wow, how much time do you spend looking at my Facebook? And her face turned ghost white. And she started stuttering and trying to explain why she spent so much time on my Facebook, which is hilarious in hindsight. But she was so embarrassed, and I felt bad for her genuinely, because so you know, I let her tell me why for maybe 45 seconds. And then I finally cut her off and said, I was just kidding. And that there is no such software when you can't do that. And one of the young guys I coach was telling me about his new girlfriend on our call last week. And he and I talk about relationships quite a bit. And he was telling me that she was marriage material. And I told him I would never have someone I called my girlfriend who wasn't marriage material. You don't enter a boyfriend-girlfriend situation unless the girl is marriage material. It's why when guys talk about their crazy ex-girlfriend, that's not something I can relate to. I mean, I can relate in that I've dated a few crazies, but you know what man hasn't? So I have an idea what it would be like, you know, if she kept a toothbrush at the house or whatever. But why would I give a crazy person the girlfriend title? That wouldn't be smart. It'll only inhibit your mission, consume too much of your time, harm your productivity, increase your stress levels, drain your bank account. You could go on. You don't want to do it. But yeah, enjoy the sex, I guess. But just don't say you weren't warned. And if you're my age, saying, like, where were you in my 20s? I really needed to hear this. Well, half the stuff I share with you here would never be approved on the airwaves, even if I had a show, right? I first needed to relinquish my need for a boss and wait for technology to advance so podcasts could be a thing in order to speak freely. I saw where Gavin Newsom is launching a podcast. The aforementioned Mr. Henderson said that it'll be like witnessing a case study on what organizational psychopath Robert Hare called the he was an expert in psychopathy, this guy Robert Hare, and he describes organizational psychopaths as snakes in suits. And I'll probably give it a watch since I really like lie detection. How does the governor of California, with all the problems they have time to do a podcast? A lot of people don't realize the time and effort it takes to do a halfway decent podcast. That's why a lot of podcasters don't last. It's a real time commitment, and you can't really know it until you get into it. But also, audiences expect authenticity, which I don't think Gavin Newsom is capable of. He's been around too long, showing us his acting ability. And the sort of, you need acting skills to rise in Democrat politics, because you'll be lying a lot. The only thing that would make him more phony than he is if he tried to now switch to being authentic, right? And then even some hardcore lefties would recognize him to be a fraud. I don't think he can risk that, which is one of the more interesting aspects of our time. Like when the actors, the Blue No Matter Who's, they tried to silence their opposition. When they did that, they were very militant about it. You had to buy into every part of leftism or you were off the team. And what that did was alienated probably half the team, which is how you get RFK and Tulsi Gabbard, Musk, Bill Ackman, David Sacks, a lot of them. You get them staying in the center, looking leftward and thinking, y'all are nuts. But when you don't let people speak, you're left with maybe 20% of the population who agrees with you. And when that's all you've got, you better get a handle on the free flow of information or you'll get thrown out of power, which is what happened, of course. So, well, both of those, right? They tried to get a handle on the information flow, and then they also got thrown out of power when they were unable to do so. Thank you, podcasts, right? So, yeah, you've got these policies that you're left with that almost nobody agrees with you on, like not wanting to stop illegal immigration, or so you can put an end to all the rapes and murders and the fentanyl deaths. And it was a mess for a while there. Plus, we've learned that a lot of the media is being funded by our tax dollars through NGOs by way of USAID. I mean, it's unbelievable. So a lot of it was all phony. It was all astroturfed. Even the protests and stuff were funded and organized by our tax dollars, more than likely. Let's do some Gerwinder, and I'll finish with Kids Say the Darndest Things. Dark Ego Vehicle Principle. It says, social justice activism is widely regarded as driven by noble intentions, but it attracts large numbers of psychopaths, narcissists, and other dark triad types, personalities, who use it to feed their sense of self-importance and to dominate others. Yeah, it's rare to see a social justice warrior who is a genuine person who wants the best for others. I've said that. It's mostly driven by jealousy and envy. And speaking of Russian literature, this is something something that they explore a lot in Russian folklore. And it's a concept I mentioned last episode, Schadenfreude, where individuals prefer others' suffering than even their own gain. So the old folk tale goes something like this, where a Russian peasant is granted one wish by a genie on the condition that his neighbor would receive double whatever he wished for. So the peasant, who is consumed by envy, wishes for something harmful to ensure that their neighbor instead suffers double. Pretty wild, right? Kids say the darndest things. So we were at lunch at Bella Green Restaurant in West Houston. This was Saturday. And we were trying to figure out which door to go in because we were meeting friends on the patio and we didn't know whether we should go in the front door or and order food or try to meet them out back first on the patio. So my daughter says to me, "Daddy, I'll show you where to go since you've never been here before." And I said, "Okay, since you know everything, I'll let you show us where to go." So we go in the door because I had been there before. So we go in the door where you order food, and we were standing in line, and I said, "Do you know what you want to eat?" to my daughter. And she says, "Yes, you said I know everything." I don't know where she gets that. Thank you all for tuning in. If you need help with something, let me know. Otherwise, I'll talk to you soon. Thank y'all. Bye, friends.